The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to Mission Minded. We're recording this show here on a Friday, and it's finally going to cool off a little bit later on tonight. We've got some showers coming. I'm just in a good mood, and I'm like...
Much needed rain, man. Now
the cherry on my sundae has just walked into Tony Curry Radio. His name's Michael Coleman. He's the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. I love this guy. He's like a brother from a different mother. And, of course, we just love talking about things, and sometimes we'll talk for a couple hours before we actually start the show, and we should just run tape on it all. It'd be all great show. It'd all be a great podcast. We got a couple of emails, info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. By the way, wanted to mention we have three new shows that we started this past week. We have a show called Home Field Advantage, which is about mortgage rates. It's through Exit Realty. We have another show called K4 Wins, which is a handicapping show. And then we're working on a third show that's going to be coming out next week. So our Tony Curry Radio podcast will be 18 shows strong, including two shows here with Michael, one called Bite by Bite and this one right here, Mission Mind. I want to thank everyone for listening. And of course, as the tide rises, all shows and boats rise as well. So we're loving that. We thank everyone for watching and listening to these shows right here on Tony Curry Radio. We'll get these emails in just a second. Very interesting article you sent me. About how to unlearn things. Now, I have always, I use this when the first time I walked in and saw my grandma naked in the shower. It's hard to unsee things. I was 16. She was 80 something. And I was like, oh my gosh. I'll never get that picture out of my head.
All sorts of comments and jokes going through my head. I'm going to leave that alone for now.
Exactly. So it's hard to unsee things, but how is it, harder or more dense to unlearn things? So I've learned something, and I guess it depends on what you're learning, correct?
Yeah. So look, we are usually shaped by the adults in our life, typically our parents, but could be a grandparent, could be an uncle, or it just could be somebody that you admire and they do something a certain way. And there's an old anecdote about, you know, the ham with, you know, they kept cooking in this particular pot. Why do you keep cooking in this pot? Well, back then, you know, it was the bone was sticking in. It's a whole story. Yeah. But people get it. I was thinking of my own life, a recent story that my daughter told me. So my wife has, let's just say that she has some germ issues, a little OCD.
Okay.
All right. Much better than it used to be. When we first started out, she would take, we had a clothes basket, and she would call that, this is the dirty clothes basket. And then you would take that, and then when you would wash and dry the clothes and fold them up, you wouldn't put them back in the clean, in the dirty clothes basket. You would have a separate clothes basket that was just for clean clothes.
Sure.
Now, I didn't grow up with that. I wasn't opposed to having two baskets, but I knew another way. I mean, I'm like, that's how she does it. She's the one in charge of the laundry. You know, hey, have at it.
Yeah.
But we raised two daughters together. And so that's what she taught my two daughters. So my daughter was laughing about when she went off to college and somebody was asking, hey, do you want me to throw your wash in there? And she goes, well, and she saw a basket. She goes, well, is that the dirty clothes basket or the clean clothes basket? And they're looking at her like she's got a tree growing out of her forehead.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? And she said it was one of the first times that she recognized, you know, we learn things inside of a family dynamic that seems 100% makes perfect sense. You understand your parents explained it to you. And you just think, we just naturally assume that that's how everybody does it. So you go out and then you get exposed to something and you're like, oh, well, now something as mild as that. I don't know if my daughters have carried that on in their own families and have two clothes baskets or not, but we all face those different kind of dynamics, and there's always a beginning point. So you may go into your career field and you may go to work there and your first 5 years, this is how you did it. I will use this in the military. When I went into the military and I had my job and I went to my very first assignment, And they said, this is what we do, and this is how you do it. And you would go to your next assignment thinking, well, this is how you do it. And then you get there and you're like, no, that's not how we do it. What are you talking about? This is crazy. That's why the old adage is in the military, the best unit you ever served in was the one you just left, because I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but they would always say, well, back in my last unit, we did this, you know, it was all perfect. Now they were nothing but doing nothing but belly aching the whole time they were there. But when they leave and see something else, it's like, oh, the good old days back here when we had it all figured out.
Yeah.
Well, you just take that. I mean, it could be a home environment. It could be a work environment. It could be your personal life. It could be whatever. It's just amazing how rigid we get in. No. This is how you do it. And it's very black and white, and we do it. And you may not even 100% know how you do it. It's just that's how you learn, and that's how you do it. And you're not really open to anything else. I'll give you one more quick story. The same daughter, several years ago, she went, she called me and she said, my husband is going to paint the bathroom. And she said, he is insisting that we put primer down and first and put two coats of paint. And I said, well, you know, with that, that's the way it was back in the day.
Yeah.
Paints, that's what you did. You covered up the old first. Mm-hmm. And then you'd have to do one coat, and usually one coat wouldn't cover. I said, but paints are so good now. You have things like paint and primer mixed together. If you if you're painting on a dark color and you want to go lighter, if you do a paint and primer, like with a top quality paint, you likely can do it all with one coat. Maybe some touch up with a second coat. She goes, well, that's what I thought. But she could not connect with her husband. He's like, no. Because his father had taught him, this is how you paint a room. And so he went through that bathroom three times applying paint, not because it needed it, but he was just stuck in that.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it time and time again where we get stuck. And the reality is we have to be able to, at some point, unlearn things, or at least be open to saying, look, I've looked at this is the way I've always done it. But at least, now, again, some of the things you do around the house are your personal habits, hygiene habits, you know, it's all personal preference. But sometimes that mindset of not being open to change and what that looks like can interfere. You could kind of see that generationally when computers came about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm 58. When my first computer I got at home was in 94, I was already an adult. So it's no one like a kid grew up with smartphones or all that. And yeah, there's been times when new stuff is coming out and adjustments, but you have to force yourself into it and learn it just because it's a part of doing business. But you saw so many people, and I still visit nonprofits, businesses, and things like that. And you see people who, we've always done it by paper. I know how to do it this way, and I'm going to stay right here. And they aren't willing to really count the cost of how much more efficient. We distributed over 2 million more pounds this year simply because we automated our inventory, and we weren't wasting near as much time with people looking for things. And also our productivity really, really shot up. But the problem is so many people are looking at that like, well, this is what I've learned. How do you unlearn something?
Yeah.
And just going through that process and almost deprogramming yourself. So I would say, let's pick something crazy. Let's say, some people put, like normal people, put cereal in the bowl and then pour milk.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the wackos out there. I don't want to say they need to be admitted into the hospital and locked down for 72 hours.
But probably
there's some weirdos out there that put milk in first and then put their cereal in.
Yeah.
That's all. That has no significance. But there are some things in our life that we need to sit down and go, hey, how do I even identify what I need to unlearn? Because some things, it doesn't matter. You don't need to go through that, but some things. And so just sitting back and trying to take a real inventory, are there things that people have come to you about and you just dig your heels in? Am I not open to what other people have to say? I was a big fan of Everybody Loves Raymond TV show. And I remember his dad, Frank, is going to paint his house. And he goes, Dad, I don't want you to paint my house. We're going to hire somebody. He goes, no, I'm going to paint it. And he goes, okay. And he gets yellow. And he goes, Dad, Deborah wants my house white. I want white. He goes, yellow is better. It's going to be painted yellow. But would not take the time to sit down and explain why he thought yellow was, but it was just, no, it's my way or the highway. In the workforce, of course, we know that doesn't work, but just so much anxiety is taken upon people because they won't really just open themselves up to change and learning and deprogramming from the old, whatever the old is, whatever the old represents in your life. It could be an old view of how you view the economy or politics or how you look at your faith and your relationship to God. It doesn't matter. Open yourself up and say, is this an area that could use some deprogramming?
I love this. And first of all, that was one of the funniest episodes because Marie got a face full of paint in that episode,
which
was hilarious. There were two things that we get set in our ways, right? And I think you and I have actually had a conversation over a breakfast that wasn't even a podcast about this, about how you're so set in your ways. And it may work for you. It may have worked for you your entire life. And it's just the way you did things.
Yeah.
And it's important that not that you change the way you do things, but that you understand that there are different ways to doing those things.
Sure.
And there have been several things, and I cannot think of anything in my particular life where you may be so staunch and so direct in something, and then all of a sudden you hear and something just triggers, and you're like, wow, it's almost like, you know, I hated red beets my entire life until I was 32. And I don't know what happened at the age of 32. I don't know if I had them in a meal or a casserole or something. Now I love red, and I hated red beets, and now I love it. And it's like, I just saw, and I was like, try them. And I tried them, and something just switched. There were two things. I drive with 2 feet. I put my left foot on the brake pad and my right on the accelerator. Well, my 12-year-old daughter is wanting me to teach her how to drive.
You know, this is a public that somebody may report you. So.
I may be one of those people that needs to be put in a house. I may be putting the milk in first.
If you say it, it doesn't sound like
I don't. I don't know how I learned that. I don't know why I learned that. But I just figured if you got 2 feet, and you don't have a clutch, because I've always had an automatic.
Yeah.
Then there was no reason just to have that foot sitting down there, and I would feel like my response time would be better, because that way, and my brother would explain to me, well, you're going to be riding the brake, and I don't ride the brake. You're going to go through brake shoes, and I don't. And so when I was trying to teach my daughter that we were in a parking lot up at Spain Park, I said people are going to tell you to use 1 foot, but I use 2. And I honestly didn't know to tell her which way. I said, so you do what's comfortable. And she said, well, I don't know what I'm doing, Dad. I mean, so I said, well, so I'm trying to teach her how to drive with 1 foot as opposed to 2 feet. And I've driven with 2 feet 40 years of my life. And so it really kind of, and I still don't get it, because I don't understand why you just have your left foot, unless, of course, again, you got a clutch and you need your left foot. I get that, but I never driven a stick. The other thing is, and we did an entire show on this. How many people stand up when they wipe? And I was like, what are you talking about? And a friend of mine, I said, of course you do. And he's like, no, he said, you don't stand up when you wipe. You stay sitting down. I said, what are you talking about? And he is, yeah, my whole family, when we wipe, we stay sitting down. We don't stand up. And I said, and then he said, and then you go back to front. And I said, back to front, you go down. And he goes, yeah. And I just could not believe that. My head exploded. I said, that's disgusting. And he's like, dude, how do you do it? And I said, well, I stand up and I go front to back. And I said, that's the only way.
I cannot believe we are having this conversation.
Oh, well, I couldn't believe that we were. I was having this discussion with him because I was like, that is the most disgusting. And he thought the way I did it was disgusting. I said, well, go to Europe and see how they do it. Because in Europe, they don't have seats. You go to a public bathroom, you have to stand up. You better have some good thigh muscles. If you ever go to Europe, you know what I'm talking about. People travel to Europe, they know. You have to stand up. You have to lean up against a wall. It's not comfortable. And so I get it. So, but it was just one of those things where my head just, I cannot believe I'm hearing this. And then several people are like, so yeah, that's the way I've done it. I've always stayed sitting down. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. So question number one is, when do you know it's time to unlearn something and try to see it the other way? Because if it's worked really well, and you mentioned this, the one thing I think is really interesting, I went down to this Catholic Alpha store where they sell Catholic, they sell the Shaws and the cassocks, and they sell all the things for Catholic weddings and masses and baptisms. And you can buy the bread there and all, and the chalices and all the stuff. And then there's tons of necklaces and rosaries and stuff. And I ordered a couple of boxes of altar bread. Uh-huh. And I don't know why I did this, but the other day, I don't know if I told you this. Now, please don't think I'm weird, but you know when a kid
gets too late for that, brother.
When a kid gets something, you eat something, and then you want to feel what it feels like to have a bunch of them in your mouth, right? So, like, you eat one sour gummy, and then you stick a bunch of sour gummies in your mouth, right? Yeah. And so, I always wondered what it would be like to stick a bunch of altar bread things in my mouth at one time. What would it taste like?
Yeah,
because when you go to mass, you're eating the body of Christ, and you're only getting one, and you don't really have a lot of taste to it. And so I bought a box of them, and they come by 1,000, like $25 for 1,000 of them. And now I can't stop eating the doggone things. They come in sleeves, and I'm sitting there just peeling off 5 or 16 of them and sticking in my mouth, and I just sit there and suck on them, and it's helping me from not dipping and stuff like that. So I got like a $50 a week addiction problem with altar bread now. And whenever I eat one of these pieces of bread, I think about Jesus. So I'm thinking I'm probably doing something pretty good. And some people may think that's kind of strange. So first of all, this guy's looking at me going, this is not weird at all. I used to give my children peanut butter and jelly wafers. And I said, really? And he goes, yeah, I used to put peanut butter and jelly on altar wafers because we get extra ones and we had to throw them away. And so I'd make snacks for him. I said, really, that's really interesting. He goes, so you're not as crazy as you think. He said, but there's no one else that comes in here every single week and gets two boxes of these things. And I said, okay, so that's kind of weird. But anyway, long story short, he just got a computer at the front desk to how to put inventory in, and it does all his inventory for him. So he used to have to go in the back at the end of each month and go count the boxes. And it would take him in like 3 days. And he's like, it was crazy until I realized that now I print it in here and it prints it off and it tells me. I just look at it and go, oh, I need to order this. Or it lets him know when he needs to order box stuff. And he just couldn't believe it. And then this guy's like my age. And I was like, wow, I mean, this is so 90s. It's unbelievable. So he had to unlearn that. He used to actually run a tab. He's like, you want me to put that on a tab for you? And I'm like, what are you living in Mayberry? I said, can you do that? I said, do you still gas up and pay for it later? I said, how do you do that? He goes, well, I got several people here that owe me some money because they just can't pay me when they come in here and buy. And I'm like, it's like, I've never heard of that. So how do you unlearn those things? And how do you know it's time to unlearn those things?
Yeah. So I will use this example. I refer back to a doctor who was talking to people about making changes. And this was years ago. And he said, if you are altering your life in any way, or it's affecting your life in any way, then that's an indication that you might need to look for a change. Okay. So like if you're like, no, I do this. Let's say, no, I won't get on an elevator. I'm going to use an extreme example. Listen, I take the stairs. Well, you get transferred to the 35th floor. You're like, well, now I need to take the elevator. You know, that's a silly example. But
no, it's a great example because I'm claustrophobic. And my mom made me work at a hospital that was 18 floors high just so I get over that fear. And I still have a fear of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you're like, well, if you worked on the second floor, that doesn't affect your life. You can continue to take the stairs, but, or if you drive certain routes, just I mean, there's so many things in our life that we just get so, no, this is the way to work. This is the way I do it. This is when I eat lunch. This is when I eat dinner. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But when it begins to affect you negatively, but you dig in, even though you're being affected negatively, that's a good sign that you need to be open to some changes. And just real quick, because I know we want to hit those emails, I think the best way that I have found, and that I've been talking with others about this type of thing, is always involve someone in your life to bring you some accountability. Because if I say I'm going to eat better today, then when I go eat and I don't hold to that, you know, nobody knows that. It's just this internal messaging and wrestling I have. But if I tell people at work, hey, I'm going to do this differently. I'm going to eat better. When we go out at lunch, I want y'all to hold me accountable. And then get advice. Well, have y'all ever done this? Have you gone through any particular change? And what helped you? And then, so you kind of get that feedback. You kind of wow that, okay, I'm going to try this. But being able to come back and talk and say, you know what, you gave me that advice and it's really helping. Or, hey, that didn't help. Do you know anything else? But you're kind of checking in. And it's, again, it's not daily accountability, but it's just somebody coming in that's part of the change process. Mm-hmm. They may not be going through the change, but they know you are. And so there's that accountability. And I'm telling you, if I say I'm going to go to the gym 3 times a week and I don't tell anybody, I'm not going to go to the gym 3 times a week. But if I have a buddy that I said, hey, I need you to meet me every morning at the gym at 5 o'clock, and I know he's going to be there 3 times a week, it's going to force me out of bed. So that principle is really true of anything that we're doing. So, I just want to encourage people. Look, it's a common thing. We all need to make adjustments in our life. We all kind of get stuck in things. Sometimes it's not a big deal, but sometimes it can really affect our lives or affect others in our lives. And so I just want to encourage people to be open to unchanging. Look at something small in your life and just go through it. Don't take the biggest challenge in your life. Take something small. Make some sort of adjustment. Maybe go a different route. Eat a different meal. Try some food you never had. Something that just opens up your processes and your thinking to something fresh in your life. And I think you benefit from it.
And always go front to back. There's no reason to go back to front. Just don't do that. Always go front to back. I don't care what you say. You know, it's interesting because we get an email here from Bill in Wetumpka that goes along with this. What I think is amazing to me, and I know this drives political people crazy, is when someone has been a Republican their whole life and then they change to Democrat, or they've been a Democrat their whole life and they change to Republican. It drives people crazy. My dad was born, raised Republican. He voted straight Republican on everything, even if he didn't like the people.
My father was the same.
I voted Republican and Democrat. I've gone back and forth the last 4 elections. And some people look at me like, I have to look at the person and go, listen, and it's not about, for me, it's like, were you better off than you were 4 years ago? Well, if that was true, you know, I got fired under Donald Trump, the first time I ever got fired my entire life. Doesn't mean I think he's a lousy president. It doesn't mean I like him either. So when you're willing to take something as staunch and as dug in as something like politics, and you're willing to see the other side, that's the person I want to talk to. That's the person I want to learn from. That's the, you know, you can call those independents. And I still think there's more independence. I think if we were as part of some insurance group, we kind of do a delicatessen type of smorgasbord of I'll have a little of this. I do think there's some people that would take some things from the Republican side, some things from the Democrat side, and put them together and cause this new party unlike anything we've ever seen. And it'll probably never happen because we're too stuck in our ways. Bill wants to know who is Mr. Coleman looking forward to being our president, a Republican or a Democrat, in so much how it affects non-for-profits? Is there a particular party in this country where non-for-profits get a better deal if the Republican's a president or a Democrat?
So I can point to both sides of the aisle, good and bad in that. So I don't think it's straight down the party. I will tell you something very interesting, or that I find interesting, because when I'm looking out over the landscape of food banking, and of course, that's the field I am. So let's use that as an example of nonprofit. The right now, the Farm Bill, and we've talked about that on the Bite by Bite. The Farm Bill was due a year ago, and it's passed once every 5 years. Well, it was supposed to be passed the year before election. It didn't get done because of normal stalemate in Congress. Now it's rolled into the political year. You know, no major legislation because you're not going to give your opponent the opportunity to get a win. That's on both sides of the aisle. So we know the Farm Bill is going to pass. But it's going to have to be after the election. And it's just interesting when you talk to politicians. Of course, you and I reside in this very red state. That's, you know, so we get more of the Republican view on things from our legislators. That's neither good nor bad. When I'm looking at food banking, it's the perspective that people tend to approach it. From. So when I talk with our senator about it, he's very much in favor of subsidies to help farmers. You know, family farms and stuff like that, there's less and less and less. So it's the big farmers that gobble up the small farms and all that. But, you know, food security, if something happens to us, we have to be able to grow our own food and produce our own food. Yeah. So it's not just farmers that are doing produce. We're talking animal farms and everything else, poultry and beef and all pork, everything. And so a lot of those subsidies go to farmers and businesses. Okay. That tends to be more Republican. And it does, when I say that, it doesn't mean the Republicans are against the poor or that Democrats are anti-business. I'm saying as a rule of thumb, you get a lot of Republicans in support of subsidies and help for farmers, businesses, things like that. On the Democrat side, they look at food insecurity lots of times from the individual in needs perspective. So they're looking at how do we help the individuals in need, which are increasing SNAP benefits or, you know, SNAP food stamps, increasing WIC, the programmatic side of funding that. The truth of the matter is we need both of those. The more of the SNAP, because right now across Alabama, there are over 700,000 food insecure. Just in our area that we cover, 256,000. So I want farmers to be helped. But it's just funny how politicians look at it. When you talk to a Republican, they're like, yeah, there's too many giveaways. There's corruption in the system, whatever. Then you look at people like that are increased government, like in SNAP and things like that. And they're like, oh, well, you can give farmers welfare, but you can't give people welfare, you know. So it goes back and forth. And I said all that to say it's never just a clear from a nonprofit perspective, Republicans are better or Democrats are better. The truth of the matter is what tends to help nonprofits the most is a good economy because and good stock market, because your biggest donors typically are going to be those who are in your 50s, 60s, 70s, have more disposable income, 80s. Their retirement accounts have increased. So they've got mandatory withdrawals. They've just got more to give, more disposable income when those things are working. When the economy's bad and you have fear, regardless if, you know, I've seen Republicans go through recessions. I've seen Democrats go through recessions. When that's happening, people get scared. They tend to get tighter with money. And so they have to make decisions about cutting things out of their life. And so they look at a nonprofit like, well, normally I'd and I will tell you this, a grocer told me last year he gave us $25,000. This year he gave us $10,000. And he explained, hey, I don't love the food bank any less.
Yeah.
But I just don't have it to give.
Yeah.
And I totally understand. And that was because of the inflation demands on food banking. And people are looking for secondary resources, not buying as much. So therefore, he doesn't have as much money to give. So that's not going to answer Bill's question, probably how he preferred, which is, hey, just tell me what's better, Democrat or Republican. From my perspective, there's good and bad on both. There's good people on both sides. But it ultimately, for nonprofits as a whole, it's really going to be how the economy is and where those where your disposable income. And of course, each nonprofit then breaks out like sometimes we all feel like we're fighting for the same pot.
Yeah.
And so everybody's making their best case. Like, I get it. Crisis pregnancy is important, and those nonprofits need funding, and food insecurity is important. We need funding. So it's not that we portray ourselves better than others. We just make an appeal to the public and try to win their hearts over. Like, and then every donor has to decide what is close to their hearts and what matters to them.
Keep sending those emails, info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We have an email we'll get to next week about the summer food benefits. I know a lot of people are happy that school started again because now their kids get to eat. How is it affecting your family? We'll talk about that next week here. Mission Minded, keep in mind, mission your mind. Coming up here on our same network of stations, you're going to be listening for Bite by Bite, a fantastic show that's specific about the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. We'll get into that. And of course, you can hear all of our shows, all 17 or 18 of them now, wherever you get your favorite podcast, Tony Curry Radio Podcast, Audio Boom, Spotify, you name it, we're everywhere right here on Tony Curry Radio. Thank you, partner. We'll catch up next week.
Hey, congrats on the new show.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.